Awesome. My name is Kimberly Williams. I am a University of Doctoral student, and I'm here at the Zora Neale Hurston Festival interviewing Maurice Bradis. Today is January 31st, and we are located at the Zora's Place in Eatonville, Florida. So, can I get your name?
It's Maurice Bradis.
Bradis. Awesome. Well, great. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
No problem.
First things first, I would love to hear about yourself. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself and how you came into this work of Afrofuturism?
Oh, okay. So I have been writing basically all of my life. Let's see, I was born in London. My mother was born in Jamaica. Mm-hmm. And so we moved to the country probably about 6 or 7 years old, and they didn't know what to do with me in the American school system. So they skipped me up a grade or two, and then the teacher just sort of stuck me in the back of the classroom and put a stack of paper on my desk and said, yeah, you're just going to create this year because we don't want to skip you up another year. So we're just going to give you paper and you just do your thing.
Okay.
By fifth grade, I won an award for an essay I wrote. I wish I still had that essay, actually. But I also wrote a short story. So I wrote an essay and a short story that year. My short story I still have. It was called The Big Mac Attacker. Because I was in fifth grade. By high school, a teacher really encouraged me to pursue writing, sort of gave me my own curriculum to go by, and my own, he basically had his own standard by which I was gonna be judged for my writing, because he was just like, no, you have something here, so we're gonna push you in different directions. Now in college, I ended up kind of putting away writing, because I was the first person in my family to go to college. But my, because my mom wanted me to do something respectable, and so she wasn't going to pay for a creative writing degree. So I ended up being, so I have a degree in biology.
Okay.
But about halfway through my college career, I kind of started sneaking in some creative writing classes, including the, I did an independent study class, and the professor was like, well, did you look me up first? And I was like, no, they pair me up randomly. And he goes, I did my dissertation in Stephen King and Clive Barker. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, I think I'm where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah.
And so that just sent me down my career of like, all right, let's seriously pursue this.
Yeah. That's a wonderful, like a wonderful transition and like faded story into your career and passion.
Right.
That's nice. Well, and how do you define Afrofuturism?
Let's see. So Afrofuturism I see as culture through the black, any sort of arts through the black cultural lens.
Okay.
Afrofuturism is very much rooted in the past,
mm-hmm.
That offers a critique of the present, but always with an eye towards the future.
Mm-hmm.
I also do a lot of activism work, and so the Afrofuturism actually has had a deep impact on my activism work also,
mm-hmm.
Because it's one of the things we realized is that we don't allow ourselves spaces to dream.
Mm-hmm.
And so, even in the activism work, I mean, we're so busy about the business of surviving today that we don't take the time to dream about what tomorrow could be.
Mm-hmm.
And so, there's a sort of very intentionality about dreaming about what tomorrow could look like. And then, you know what? If that's what tomorrow could look like, let's start working towards that goal now.
Mm-hmm.
So
that is wonderful.
Yeah.
That's so wonderful to hear, because when I think about also your work. With the Oaks Academy, and then with the, is it pronounced Kepra?
Kepra.
Yes.
Oh yeah, good luck with that name.
Yes, Kepra,
yeah.
Yes. So how do you think about fusing and looking at Afrofuturism in that work, and that social justice work?
Yeah, so, and so I'm also a person of faith. And so it all ties together for me,
mm-hmm.
because what I realize is that all of this is about operating out of a sense of a future hope.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a future hope for the world, a future mm-hmm. hope for my students, a future hope for my kids.
Yeah.
And so it's all about working towards this future hope, but living in light of that future hope today.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. And how, from your perspective, what does Afrofuturism offer society right now? So, mm-hmm. I know some of that you touched on, but
yeah.
It can offer like a critique, a liberation opportunity.
Oh, yeah. it's all that. So so for a start, Afrofuturism provides a mirror.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, here's where we are, and here's who we are. And it's important that you see us. because one of the things I, so I always struggled with my activism work because I'm just like, well, I'm just a writer. So what does that look like? Well, both in terms of my activism and in terms of my faith. Yeah, I'm a writer. So what does that look like from a faith perspective? What does that look like to join in God's redemptive work of, on this planet as a writer? As an activist, what does it look like to use my gifts as a writer to move any of the social justice work forward? What does that look like? And so one of the things, I was working with a group called the Learning Tree in Indianapolis. And one of the projects we were doing, we called them portfolios. And so what we were doing, we were just going and interviewing neighbors, just people next door, people on the street, getting to know them. And then, you know, just asking them questions about themselves. You know, what are you passionate about? What are your gifts? What talents do you offer the community? What are things that you could teach? What gets you out of bed in the morning? What motivates you to get up? And so we start asking these sort of very intentional questions as a way to create profiles on who are the gifts in the community and what gifts do people offer. And then I'd write up profiles about them. And so I'd write up these profiles and then I'd hand the profiles back to them like a, you know, week or 2 weeks later. It's like, here's how you're seen by the community. And then all of a sudden you have these people who are just like, wait a second, I do this? This is who I am? And this is how community sees me? And it was just that whole idea of like, you know what, we don't often get a chance to see ourselves. And more importantly, how the community sees and values us. And so that's part of that work of, and so when I say, what does Afrofuturism offer? It offers up a chance for us to see ourselves. And one of the things I talked about with my kids at the Oaks Academy, because one of the things that we're about at the Oaks Academy is not just seeing you for who you are, but we also see you for the infinite possibilities of who you could be. And I think that's an important part that Afrofuturism offers also, is that there's an infinite array of possibilities for us. So we don't have to be trapped by these old narratives. We don't have to be trapped and defined by these stories that have been put on us, not even written by us, but stories that have been put on us. So what does it look like to create our own stories and to imagine our own futures and imagine our own possibilities and then start living into that?
Wonderful. I'm just curious, where do you see your faith and Afrofuturism sort of like collide together or create together? Do you see like a constraint at times or conflict, or is it one speak to the other?
Well, so I actually came up as a horror writer. So you can only imagine the sort of conflicts and stuff that would involve, you know, being a horror writer and a Christian at the same time. So it's just like, like everywhere I go. So it's like, you know, obviously conflicts within church, you know, that sort of thing. But, you know, writing for me is always about working out things for me. I mean, one of the reasons I was a horror writer, I look back on it, is because I had a lot of rage to work out.
Yeah.
A lot of rage, a lot of pain I was working through.
Yes.
And I did that through the horror lens. But then with the Afrofuturism, it's like, now my lens has sort of shifted. So that I get to tell different stories.
Yeah.
And so the Afrofuturism, like I said, comes back to that whole idea of there's a future hope. But we can create that hope. So what is the future we are trying to create? And so I'm all about dreaming about the best possible futures for us.
Wonderful. And in your mind, what is this, as we turn into thinking about Afrofuturism and Zora Neale Hurston, and your frame of reference in your mind, what is the link between Hurston and Afrofuturism?
I'm trying to think of the best way. Well, for a start, to be straight, it's about living your authentic self right now in the present. And she was a model for that. So I'm going to live my authentic, lived experience right now, all the time. And it's taken me, you know, I turned 50 this year. I'm just now feeling comfortable in my own skin to be able to live my authentic self. But and so that, to have that as a model is just like, no, the sooner you can get there, the sooner you'll be at peace with yourself and in the world.
That's very true.
And so so she's very much that for me. And then the whole idea of just living into your passions, living into, you know, this world of art and all the possibilities that art can do, not just in the sense of art for its own sake, but in terms of what it can do in terms of building and shaping community. Those are some other aspects I don't think people really appreciate, is the whole idea of the whole community that was established via art through her. So these are important things I think that I've taken to my own practice. It's like, it's not just about the writing itself, it's about the communities that we build along the way. So I've been very intentional about that as a part of my journey as an artist.
And do you think that Zora Neale Hurston, the festival engagement with Afrofuturism, continues Hurston's legacy?
Oh, absolutely. Because she was a dreamer. Mm-hmm. She was a dreamer. And in some ways, we are the dream that she was dreaming of. So so the idea of, well, us being able to gather in this space like this is huge. And the idea of bringing together this generation's dreamers who are still dreaming for an even better future for us, I think that's a very strong continuation of her vision and mission.
And what can contemporary Afrofuturists learn from Hurston and other black scholars and Afrofuturists?
So, you know, at the very beginning I said that Afrofuturism is about being rooted in your past. Mm-hmm. And it's not that, it's not just that they are part of our past, but they are foundational for us. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't be here without them. So the idea of, and you know, one is, and partly it's about, you know, respecting your ancestors and your elders. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I wouldn't be here without them. So everything I do starts with by honoring them.
Mm-hmm. So. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. And so when you think about, is that I really like what you were talking about before in terms of thinking about like rage and horror. Mm-hmm. What were some particular figures and some films that I think were really representative of that transition and then getting into Afrofuturism?
So films and figures for as far as my horror writing stuff?
Yes. Muses, even events too as well.
So on the movie side, you can pretty much draw a straight line for me, starting with the movie Do the Right Thing. Actually, yeah, Do the Right Thing was a pivotal moment for me, that movie. It just left me shook. I mean, when I saw the movie for the first time, after they rolled the credits, I mean, I just sat there in the movie theater for an extra 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. I was just shook. Mm-hmm. And then move forward a little bit to the movie Candyman, which is still one of my favorite horror movies of all time. and just the figure that tragic figure that he represents. Mm-hmm. So you have those two, and then along with Public Enemy being one of my formative musical influences. Then we've moved forward. So in terms of shaping me, probably the three critical works for me, one was actually by Stephen King. He had a novel called Desperation. Mm. And like I said, I've always struggled and questioned with my faith. And so the whole plot of, the whole theme of the novel Desperation was you're either living in a state of faith or you're living in a state of desperation. Mm. And that informed me a lot of how I could use my faith worldview as a part of my writing, you know, to ask certain questions and to provide certain journeys for people. So I was like, oh, okay, that's clear for me. Then came Octavia Butler's Parable of the Sower, mm-hmm. Which taught me a lot about, you know, just examining your present and what it means to survive your present. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, it'd be Walter Mosley's Futureland. Mm-hmm. Walter Mosley's mostly known as a crime writer.
Yes.
But his Futureland is a collection of like nine interconnected short stories. But that was the first time that my eyes got open to, wait a second, I can do stuff dreaming about a future? Yeah. I didn't know we could do that. And his ability to build worlds and to imagine futures and these deeply intricate examinations of politics and economics oppressive systems. I'm just like, so it's both in the future and it disentangled the past. I mean, my present also.
Yes.
So that is probably the, when it comes to drive me towards Afrofuturism, it started right there with Futureland, Walt Mosley's Futureland.
Okay, all right. And lastly, I was just wanting to know about your multi-genre, right? Mm-hmm. So I mean, like novellas, short stories, editors of collections. How do you sort of like navigate and negotiate that multi-genre? And also too, are you considering thinking about even expanding that into other genres?
Yeah, so part of it is about, I mean, just as an artist, I'm trying to navigate what it looked like to be a professional artist.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm constantly seeking out opportunities, never placing all your eggs in one basket because, you know, well, for a start, just even in publishing, things change. You know, what's hot one moment, what genre is hot one moment might not be hot next. And,
that's right.
And my job is to, you know, keep surviving. I've been, this is my, I'm sorry. See, 2019 marked my 20th year as a professional writer.
Mm.
And so a lot of it has been about, you know, constantly seeking out new opportunities and partly just thinking outside the box. Because, you know, as a writer, it's like, well, my first love, for example, is short stories.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to build a career off short stories and short stories alone. But short stories gives me a great way to work out different muscles when it comes to my creative writing. So I have my short stories and I have the novellas and I have the novels because, you know, in the modern age, your career is marked by novels largely.
Mm-hmm.
So that partly is just a sheer practical consideration. Now, as a creative, sometimes it's just a matter of what's interesting to me right now. What story do I want to tell right now? I mean, I'm the author of a middle grade detective novel series.
Yeah.
That started off from me going, hey, I wonder if I could write Elmore Leonard for kids and entertain my son at the same time.
Mm.
And so it started as a project. Like, can I entertain my son with this story?
Yeah.
So now suddenly I'm a middle grade author. But, you know, sometimes it's just about, you know, what opportunities pop up, you know, or what challenges come along the way. In the last week, I've turned in a novel project, and I turned in a gaming project, and I turned in a play project. Three very different areas, but part of the challenge for me was, like, these are three different, very, very different modes of storytelling.
Okay.
And so how does each one challenge my ability to tell stories? And I love that as a creative. You know, I'm all about how am I challenged? What can I do next? How can I, you know, take my game to another level? So I'm just constantly in that mode of, all right, what's next? Give me a challenge.
Wonderful. That concludes the interview. Did you have any other thoughts or comments?
Well, I always got thoughts, so, you know.
Yeah.
nothing right now, but you provoked me, and then I'll just let it all fly loose.
Okay.
But no, I'm good.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.